නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ යෝ උභන්තේ යුද්විදිත්වාන මජ්ජේ මන්තාන නිප්පති තම්බ්‍රෝමි මහා පුරිසෝතේ සෝද සිබ්බනි මච්චගාති. Dear Dhamma friends, we are going to listen to a Dhamma sermon based on Majjhe Sutta, which is available in Anguttara Nikaya. Anguttara Nikaya is the one where various suttas are collected according to their number of facts included in. So in this sutta is categorized under the sixth type or sixth factors, where this sutta talks about six types of solutions given to a particular verse. So this verse is uttered by the Buddha at one occasion where he meets one of the Brahmin. As I said on yesterday, there is one Brahmin teacher called Bhavari. So he had so many students, Brahmin students, and once he get to know that Buddha has arisen in the world, so he wanted to learn from the Buddha. But unfortunately, he was quite old, so he himself can't go and meet the Buddha. So what he did was ask his students to go and meet the Buddha and ask questions mentally so that Buddha may understand those questions by reading the mind, and then Buddha will answer the questions verbally. So this was their plan. Now many of them come and meet the Buddha, and they, after cordial discussion, so they start to think about their question. Then Buddha reads the mind and understand the question, and accordingly Buddha gives the answer. On such occasion, there is one youth called Tissametteya. He is also asking a question, and to that question Buddha gives a answer. That verse, that gatha, appears like a riddle. Yo ubhante vidithvana majje manta nalipati. So this is the sort of answer Buddha is giving. So there Buddha says, if one knows the two ends, and if he know the middle, and again he is not stick to the middle, to him I call that he is a wise person, having understood both ends, and the wise one does not stick to the middle. And to him I call a great man, a great person, and who has transcended the stream stress. So this is the kind of answer Buddha has given to this Tissametteya, the Brahmin youth called Tissametteya. So at a later time, now monks also know about this incident, which is explained in the Parayana Vagga, talking about going beyond. And on one occasion, there were several monks get together, and they started to discuss about this particular verse while Buddha was residing at Varanasi in Migadaya. So at that time, so different monks are giving their own different answers, different explanations. And first monk, actually according to the way that I described, we first taken one explanation where two ends are the past and the future. The middle is the present, and the seamstress is craving. So this is answer given by one monk. So typically our minds are attached to past and future. Constantly we are jumping from past to future, future to past. It is very much like a sewing machine. We are stitching two linens or two clothes. Constantly past and future, past and future. Constantly we are jumping from one to the other. So never paying attention much to the present moment. Because past and future is so attractive and sometimes so sorrowful, but still mind likes to associate. As a result, mind miss the middle point, mind miss the present moment. So the craving, seamstress, constantly saw past and future, and we are missing the present moment. And the next explanation is related to pleasant feeling and the painful feeling. So as we all know, we all like pleasant feelings, pleasurable feelings, and we never like painful feeling. So we constantly have a struggle to get out of or get rid of painful feeling and to attach with the pleasurable feelings. So if we consider our whole life, we are going after various pleasures and trying to go away from various pains. So we know basically these two types of pain feelings, pleasant feelings and the painful feelings. We are always jumping from this to that, this to that. So likewise, so another monk giving his explanation, he says, two ends are pleasant feelings and the painful feelings. So since we are attached to these two types, or we are dealing with these two types, we are missing the middle. So middle is the neutral feeling. Now, that is also not that difficult to understand, because whenever we feel even kind of a neutral feeling, we feel it like boring. It appears like monotony. So we immediately want to go for something exciting. So we are jumping to excite or trigger our mind, trigger our senses, so that we be away from the middle. So this tanha, craving, always take us away from this middle. So we are never observing the middle. Rather, we consider it as kind of boring. As a result, we are either in pleasurable feeling or in the painful feeling. So this is another answer given by another monk. Then we discuss another answer, that is where, as we all know, we have six senses and corresponding six external sense bases. So another monk gives such explanation, telling that the six internal sense bases are the one end and corresponding external sense bases are the other end. So that is also not that difficult to understand. So we always want to see something. If it is boring, then we want to hear something. And if it is boring, we want to smell something. Again, we want to taste something. Again, we want to have some sort of pleasant sensations. If not, we want to think about something. So we are constantly jumping from any of these faculties, and we are constantly taking whatever type of objects, corresponding objects from these six types of senses. So these objects, that means sights, sounds, smells, tastes, tangibles, and the mental objects appear very attractive. So we are immediately grasping them, holding them, attaching to them. So the craving constantly make us sort of occupied on any of these external sense bases. Either we want to watch a movie, either we want to listen to music, either we want to have a good smell, or we want to have delicious food, taste some delicious food, or we want to have a good sensations. If not, we like to think, we like to proliferate, we like to dream, we like to imagine. So this is how we spend our time. So therefore, this explanation is also not that difficult, where external sense bases are appear beautiful, attractive. As a result, we are constantly trying to attach to them. So in order to do that, we are using the internal sense bases, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and the mind. So those internal sense bases appear the internals, the one end, and these external sense bases appear as the other end. But who is distinctly knowing these? So that is the function of consciousness, vijnana. So we can't know about that. That is being completely hidden, because this operation is so fast, really rapid, so we don't have capacity to understand the function of the consciousness. Consciousness is the one cognizing all these, but we completely forget it, because craving go and immediately grasp the external sense bases. Whenever there is kind of a beautiful sound, then we don't know the function, or we completely forget about the function of the ear, the recognition part, cognition part, Rather, we immediately go and grasp that sound, or even the person who's in the song, or even the instrument which is playing the music. So immediately we go and grasp it because of craving. As a result, we completely miss the function of the consciousness. So this venerable says, so these internal sense bases are one end, external sense bases are the other end. The middle, which is not evident to us because of craving, is the consciousness. Then some similar answer, but little subtle in a way, is given by another monk. He says, nama is one end, and rupa, form, is the other end. And the middle, again, is the consciousness. So this is what we discussed yesterday as our last point, where when we see a movie, assume that we are going to a theater and we want to see a movie. So at that time, assume that it is pitch dark, so we can't see anything. But when they start the movie, there's a projector, and using which they are projecting some light, various slides, images, to the screen. As a result, we are seeing a movie. Now, this light and slides actually helps to understand that there is a screen. Otherwise, we can't even see that, because screen also being hidden, or we can't see it because of the darkness. And on the other hand, if there is no screen, then that light rays coming from the projector may not reflect. So in a way, so this reflection is important, and the light is also important. So reflection is very much like the function of the consciousness. All these images are very much like the name and form. That is the nama and rupa. Now in this answer, this venerable says, the understanding part or the mental aspect, the nama, is one end. Rupa, particularly here the sign, mental image, is the other end. The reflective consciousness is the middle. In a way, this is fairly a very subtle answer. And he says, this reflection is completely hidden from us because the images appearing in the mind is so attractive. Suppose there is a mental image about your loved one. You are basically at a far place. You can't see him or her. But you can imagine his or her face. Now it appears very beautiful. And we don't know the operation of the consciousness. We completely forget it. And the craving helps to completely be ignorant about that consciousness, function of the consciousness, and we immediately attribute kind of a personality, kind of a person, to that mental image. And we now think about him, we now think about her. But if we come to the very basics, so it's a mental image we actually thought as someone, attributed to someone. So this kind of a thing happens inside the mind. So only if we are able to closely observe the operation of the mind, then one would be able to understand these kind of very subtle information. So therefore Buddha says there's a kind of a interrelationship between name and form and consciousness. Name and form conditions consciousness, and consciousness conditions name and form. Now, we can get on to another solution today. That is another monk in this audience now proposing another solution. So he says, contact is one end. The arising aspect of the contact, samudaya, pasa samudaya, contact arising, is the other end. Pasa nirodha, the cessation of contact, is the middle. seem stress is craving. So this is the solution he is proposing. Now this is also somewhat difficult answer, but anyway worthy answer to understand. This contact, what is the contact? Passa, that is the Pali term for contact. So Buddha gives a very beautiful example, easy to understand, so we'll start from that. During the good old days, so they used two dry sticks to generate fire. So what they do is they are taking two dry sticks, they touch it each other, they rub it each other, so after a while they start to get heated up. Then once it is closer to a kind of very say wool or cotton, then those strokes, fire strokes, starts to jump, generate, kindle, and then that helps to generate fire, kindle fire. Now this is the technique used in the good old days, since they didn't have lighters or matchsticks. Now if we consider, now Buddha is giving the simile here, telling that if we consider two dry sticks, when they rub those to each other, after a while it generates heat. So that is, we can understand. Now assume that we keep it away. Now after some time it has generated some heat, but now we stop rubbing and then we keep it away, keep both away. Now we are not rubbing each other. Now what happens is that generated heat dissipates to the environment. After that, again, those two sticks cools down. Buddha says similarly, contact causes feeling. Now, whenever a contact happens, feeling is generated. Suppose there is a contact which is conducive to produce pleasurable feeling, then the obvious result is a pleasurable feeling. Suppose there is contact which is conducive to produce painful feeling, then after such contact happens, painful feeling arises. When there is contact which is conducive to produce neutral feeling, if such contact happens, then neutral feeling arises. Say for example, if we come to a walking session, say you are taking a walk in park, now you are walking. Now your left foot is touching the ground. Now that is where the touching happens. That is where the contact happens. Now walking seems mostly a kind of a neutral exercise. It is not that pleasurable at the beginning, not that painful either. When your foot touches the ground, as it contacts the ground, now there is a feeling. So this feeling is fairly neutral. Because you can now understand this kind of contact, when your foot touches the ground, which is neither painful, neither pleasurable, then the result is a neutral feeling. Suppose your leg touches, assume that you are in a very, very cold environment, but you like to have some warm feeling, and there is some area where the sunshine has available. At that place, you are now touching your foot. So you feel some happy feeling because that heat available there, you feel like kind of a pleasant, because you are in a cold environment and you are expecting some warmth, and as a result you feel happy. Now such contact is causing some pleasurable feeling. Similarly, assume there is a thorn in your walking path, or a stone on your walking path, without knowing, suppose you hit that. So that is the contact, and it conditions a painful feeling. So likewise, we can simply understand, so depending on the type of contact, the feeling happens. If there is no such contact, then there is no corresponding feeling as well. So like we are keeping those two sticks away without rubbing, then that arisen heat dissipates. Similarly, if we stop contact, then the generated feeling also starts to fade away. If we are again and again doing that, continuing that contact, generating that contact, then it appears like kind of a continuous pleasurable feeling, like a continuous painful feeling, like a continuous neutral feeling. But constantly we have to maintain that contact. Again and again we have to contact, then again and again corresponding feeling would arise. Now Buddha says, constantly we jump from arising aspect to the other arising aspect. We never see the complete picture. Suppose you are watching a TV and there is a beautiful song and you are watching it and enjoying it. And now you are reaching the end of it, not yet completely end, but now you know now it is going to end. Now you feel like little bored. Immediately you switch the channel and now you are watching another song. Assume like that. Now you are enjoying another song. Now again when it is reaching some level, you feel like little bored. And again you change the channel and you are listening to another song or watching another song. So likewise, constantly we are jumping from arising side, samudaya side, to the samudaya side. We never see the complete picture. In other sense, we never see the cessation aspect. We constantly jump from samudaya to samudaya, arising to arising. We are enjoying to some extent, and after that, without waiting to see the complete cessation, we immediately grasp something else, which is already arising, and now it is continuing. So we are basically staying, we like to grasp the arising aspect and to stay when it is available. And when it is trying to diminish, when it is trying to disappear, we immediately grasp something else, which also is now either arising or already arisen and existing. On the other hand, we can say we all like to celebrate our birthdays, but we hate the death. We constantly like to celebrate birthdays and we like to live. So we are always jumping from birthday to living, birthday to living. But we miss the death, or we don't understand the death. We hate the death because the arising is beautiful. Birthdays are wonderful. Birthdays are enjoyable. And the living is also, if everything is happening well, that is also not that bad. So we like to sway from birthday to the living, birthday to the living. But we forget the death, inevitable death we forget. So this answer deals on that aspect. Basically, this arising aspect of contact is one end. The existing aspect of the contact, prevailing side, is the other end. And we miss the middle, that is the cessation of the contact. Because cessation appears like boring, and we consider it as sort of bad, or not beautiful, or unattractive, not auspicious. So we constantly like to attach with the arising side and existing side and forgetting about the cessation side. So the result is we continuously go on and on in the samsara. Because suppose that you are dealing in this life. Now you are enjoying the life. Suppose you are in a good mood. You have your children, you have your parents, you have your husband, wife, a good job, vehicle, whatever it is, and you enjoy this life. But as you coming closer to the death, you don't want it. Now you want to have another life, another good life, another enjoyable life, maybe even a celestial life. So you immediately grasp that. So we are missing the complete picture. We immediately grab something else. And now we are in that life. Again and again, now enjoying that life. Assume now almost closer to the death. Still we are not understood the full picture, complete picture. Again want to grasp another life. We want to exist more. We want to enjoy more. It is not enough. So we want to enjoy more. So again we go and grasp another life. So likewise, so not knowing the complete picture, we are constantly traversing in this samsara. One life after the other life. One life after the other life. Not knowing the complete picture. Not knowing the cessation. So therefore, even though these solutions, alternative solutions given by monks, appear somewhat theoretical, they have some very profound practical aspect as well. Constantly we want to grasp something existing or something arising. And we hate the cessation. We hate the decreasing or disappearing sight. As I said, you like birthdays, you hate funerals. And we like to enjoy the life. So this is what happens. So as a result, we never understand the complete picture. So this craving constantly avoids seeing that cessation and constantly bound us either to the birthday or to the existence or to the beautiful aspect, beautiful sight of the life. And if you consider typical developed countries, so they even hide the deaths. They even hide the various types of suffering. And they all want to show the good side. When a baby is born, now a very beautiful newly born baby is there. Now you enjoy. So you give him a name, you enjoy, you celebrate the birthday. So likewise, we are always promoting that arising side. And again, we enjoy the life, we always promoting the existence. And all the old people, sick people, are in some other area, maybe elder houses, hospitals, hospice. And that is completely away from the enjoyable city. And how about the death? So they are completely handled by the funeral directors. We don't know much about it. So the funeral directors take care of hiding the death. So they wrap the dead body and they present that also as very beautiful. And now we enjoy with something else. So likewise, this craving in a way hides the death, hides the cessation and completely bounds us to the arising side and the existing side. Now, Buddha says, this salayatana paccaya passo, these six sense bases are the cause for the arising of contact. When I get together with, say, form, so then the eye consciousness, and all together we consider it as eye contact. When ear contacts with the, say, sound, then ear consciousness, all three together we consider as ear contact. Similarly, nose contact, tongue contact, body contact, and mind contact. So these are the six types of contacts available. And constantly, we are subjected to any kind of contact. We as living beings, we can hear sounds, we can see various sights, we can smell various odors, we can taste various, say, tastes, we can sense various tangibles, and if not, we can even think various things. So, constantly, we are in a kind of activity in a way. There is no resting period at all. There is no break at all. There is no pause. constantly these faculties are in operation. And it appear like beautiful, it appear like wonderful. But on the other hand, Buddha says it is like a torture. Say, you might experience this when you want to meditate. Say, for example, you want to have a very nice, pleasant meditation. Now you go and sit and you close your eyes. Assume there's a neighboring home, they immediately starts very loud music. Now it appears like a torture because you want to have a very silent environment, but unfortunately this music so loud appears like torturing. Assume that there is a dog barking loudly and you immediately jerk and get shocked and come out of your meditation, your silence. So this is like a thorn. This sound appears like a thorn. So even though we consider sounds are good, now you can understand it is like a torture in another way. Similarly, suppose you want to avoid someone, you don't like to see him, you don't like to see her. But unfortunately, all of a sudden you had to see him. All of a sudden you have to see her. So you are now trying to get rid of it, get rid of the situation, but unfortunately you have to see. So likewise, there may be certain other situations that, say, someone is going through some difficulty, kind of a tragedy, you have to see it. So this seeing also appears like a torture. On the other hand, there are some very bad smells. So still you have to go through it. Still you have to bear it. Again, it appears like a torture. And sometimes, suppose you get sick and there may be decoctions. You know, in the typical Ayurvedic medicine, they are very bitter. But you have to drink. So when you are drinking it, so you have to in a way go through some suffering. So these states are really like a torturing. And suppose you have to extract a tooth. So now the senses are operating. And assume that the doctor is putting his full power and extracting the tooth. And it is utterly painful. Now this is a kind of a contact and it causes a lot of suffering. So this body has the capacity to generate a lot of suffering. And similarly, there may be something that you want to forget. Suppose there is a bad incident, sorrowful incident, again and again coming to the mind. Now you want to forget it. But unfortunately, again it comes to the mind. Again you want to forget it. But again it comes to the mind. So likewise, so these memories, certain past memories, are also like certain torturing. There may be things that you don't like to think about. Suppose there is a bad thing going to happen. Someone is giving you a prediction. And you don't want to think about it. You like to have some pleasant experience. Think about something else. But immediately that prediction comes to the mind. Again you get afraid. So it is like a torture. So therefore Buddha says, even though it is necessary to have some healthy senses, if we consider their function, so it is some kind of a torture in another way. Now, in order to completely be free from this, then what is the path? So that is a question that we need to ask from ourselves as practitioners. Now we know two ends. One is the existing side of the contact. The other end is the arising side of the contact. So what we miss is the middle, that is the cessation of the contact. Now, if we want to be free from suffering, we have to understand this cessation. We have to understand this cessation aspect of the contact. So what is the path for that? Path for that is nothing but the Noble Eightfold Path. We have to practice morality, we have to practice concentration, and we have to practice wisdom in order to understand the cessation of contact. So it is a complete path in a way that we have to adhere to in order to understand the cessation of contact. It is not that we are here trying to simply keep our mind on the cessation aspect of breath, say rising and falling or etc. So that is actually a part of this whole path. If we consider the full picture, if we want to completely understand the cessation, then we have to adhere to the complete path. So that is where Noble Eightfold Path comes to the picture. So this is well explained in the sutta called Sammadhitti Sutta, where Venerable Sariputta says, "Ayameva ariyo attangiko maggo passa nirodhagamini patipada." So this Noble Eightfold Path is the path revealing us the cessation of contact. So that's why mindfulness practice, morality, and wisdom actually have a big value. Now, when one develops, suppose mindfulness, slowly, so his faculties are improving, he now become mindful, and suppose you are observing your breath. Again and again, you are applying your attention to in-breath, to out-breath, again to in-breath, again out-breath. Now you can recognize the breath. Suppose now you can even recognize how it appear, how it even disappear. Whether it is long, whether it is short, whether it is warm, whether it is cool. So all these subtle aspects also you can understand. So as you grow, you can even understand this breath is not a single breath, it's a series of breaths, series of in-breaths, series of out-breaths. And each minute in-breath has a beginning and has an end. Each minute out-breath has a beginning, has an end. As you carefully observe this whole thing, now you can't even distinguish whether it is in-breath or out-breath, but there is some sensation very rapidly arising and passing away. Very rapidly arising and passing away. As you continuously watch very carefully, then there's a possibility that you can't really grab or understand this whole picture. Now everything appear like blurred. Everything appear like a flux. Now the whole picture almost like disappeared. Not interesting, and you are sort of watching it anyway, and you feel like bored. But the instruction is given to continue. Now, typically, when things are bored, you immediately jump to some pleasurable feeling. But now, instruction is given not to jump and grab a pleasurable side, rather to persevere this boredom. Now we are anyway out of respect to the teacher, with lot of faith on the Buddha, with lot of faith on the Dhamma. Now you are somewhat maintaining this boredom. More and more you continue like that, so there's a kind of a dispassion arise. So because what is in front of you is not interesting, everything appear like blurred. There is no boundaries, there is nothing to grasp, nothing beautiful to grasp. So after a while, so everything appear like this, very much like gone. Nothing is there. Nothing to establish, nothing to grasp. Mind has nothing to hold. So at that time, one is experiencing some momentary cessation. One important thing is that you should not grasp something else as well. Assume that you are observing some sort of a sensation, very rapidly arising and passing away. And after a while, there's a kind of a peace, kind of a gap, kind of an emptiness. Assume that you didn't grasp something else. Then you can experience some momentary cessation. But unfortunately, our hindrances, various habitual tendencies in the mind, does not like it, does not like to be with it. So immediately it go and grasp something else. Again, it go and grasp something arising, something existing. Because the craving again give us wrong instruction. Go and immediately grasp something. So that is a wrong instruction given by the craving. Now suppose you get to know the story, you get to know the instruction. Next time also now you are practicing. Again you reach the same area. Now you know there's a kind of rabbit rising and passing away happens. And after a while, everything stop. Nothing is there. Complete emptiness, complete silence. Appear bored. But you remember the instruction not to grasp. Suppose now you are able to maintain that non-grasping, unattached state for another minute. So in a way we can say we are now experiencing cessation for a 1 minute. So likewise, assume that the practitioner is prolonging this experience. Next time say 2 minutes, next time 5 minutes, next time 10 minutes, next time 15 minutes. So likewise, when there is nothing to attach, nothing to hold, nothing to grasp, then you can experience this cessation. So it appear like boring, but if you are well equipped with the knowledge of the teaching, probably you may understand there is a big value to this. Even though it appear like empty, it is really rich. It is really profound. So this is something I always has missed. This is something this I was negligent. This is something that I always trying to get rid of. And this is something that I was afraid of. And this is something I missed because of craving. Now with that understanding, that faith, you are now enduring this emptiness. You are being in this emptiness. You experience this emptiness. Now, if you are familiar with this more and more, then you will understand there's a kind of a silence in the mind. No torturing, no thoughts, no sounds, no sights, no smells, no tastes. Nothing is there. Nothing to stimulate. Just be. So you might understand how profound is this just be. How profound is this just be, doing nothing. Ditte dittamattam bhavissati. When you see something, do nothing. Sute sutamattam bhavissati. When you hear something, do nothing. Mute mutamattam bhavissati. When you smell something, do nothing. When you taste something, do nothing. When you sense any kind of a tactile sensation, do nothing. Vinyate vinyatamattam. When there is a thought, mental image come to the mind, do nothing. So then you are not constructing. You are not proliferating. You are not manipulating. And you are not fabricating. You are trying to stop fabrication. You are now trying to stop mental construction. You are now trying to stop adding likes and dislikes into the picture. You allow things to be. We allow things to be as it is, without putting your hand, without going to change things.
you allow things to be. You just be. More we can do like that, more we can be in the cessation. More we can just be. So this is where we have to practice Noble Eightfold Path. You can't simply do this merely through your sitting, merely in your walking, but you need to support in many different ways. Because various defilements come and disturb you. Till your mind is having any kind of defilement, it does not allow you to just be. It come and disturb you. So you will understand how lust come and disturb you, how hate come and disturb you, how jealousy come and disturb you, and how miserliness come and disturb you, how restlessness come and disturb you. Likewise, you are now in a good position even to understand various defilements. More you understand various defilements, without feeding them, without fertilizing them, you can allow them to go. Now you are practicing in a way the fading away of various defilements. So defilements become weaker and weaker. You can now just be. Another defilement come, you are not feeding it, you are not getting deluded by it, you simply let it go. Again, you can enjoy, just be. Again, another defilement come, you recognize it, you leave it aside, again, just be. So Buddha says, this state, just be, is excellent. This is really wholesome. Etang santang, etang panitang, yadidang upekha. This is peaceful. This is sublime. This equanimity. Just be. And he promotes being in this equanimity. This upekha. Etang santang, etang panitang, yadidang upekha. So Buddha recommends such practice in Indriya Bhavana Sutta. That is in the Majjhima Nikaya, last sutta. So there, Buddha recommends, suppose that you are seeing something from your eye. So at that time, Buddha says, if your mind jumps to something else, say it is going to some pleasurable feeling, going to some painful feeling. So Buddha says, don't go and grasp it, don't go and hate it, don't try to reject it, try to come back to the middle. You are now familiar with the middle, just be that equanimity and try to come back to the middle. How quickly? Like that you open and or close your eye. That quickly, the noble disciple, Buddha says, come back to that equanimity. Suppose you hear something. Now, as a result, assume that you lose that equanimity and jump to something pleasurable, something pleasant. Or else, again, mind jump to something painful. You are going through some painful experience. But Buddha recommends returning back to that middle, that equanimity. You know that equanimity, which is unattached, empty, spacious, just be. How quickly you need to return to that? Buddha says, the noble disciple returns to that very quickly, like snap of his fingers. Suppose one is smelling something, as a result, kind of an odor, as a result, his mind drifted from that middle, that equanimity. So its mind again sort of agitated. So Buddha asks us to return back to the middle, to that equanimity as quickly as possible. And the simile given is like a raindrop on a lotus leaf. You know, when kind of a sloping lotus leaf, if you put a raindrop, it does not stay there. Quickly slips off. Likewise, Buddha says, the noble disciple, whenever he is going through some sort of agitation in the mind because of some sort of a smell, he quickly takes it back to the middle. And again Buddha says, suppose because of the taste, mind get agitated. Now you lost the middle, you lost the equanimity, you lost the emptiness, you lost the unattached state of mind. So Buddha requests to return back to that unattached state of mind quickly, like someone spit out a ball of spittle. Such quickly Buddha asks to come back to the middle. And suppose you are going through some sort of a sensation. As a result, again mind become agitated. You have lost the middle. If you have lost the middle, again Buddha requests us to come to the middle, return back to the middle, very quickly as possible, like you extend your arm, or like you flex your arm. So that easily, Buddha says, the noble disciple returns back to the middle. And assume there is something appear in the mind, kind of a mental image, kind of a thought appear in the mind. Because of some unmindfulness, assume that you again agitated the mind. You have lost the middle. You have lost the equanimity. You have lost the peace of the mind. So again Buddha asks to come back to the middle, to that peace, as quickly as possible, like a raindrops putting onto a red hot iron plate. You know, if you put some raindrops, water drops, onto a red hot iron plate, it immediately evaporates. It doesn't take long time. Within a seconds, everything gone. So likewise, Buddha asks us to come to the middle as quickly as possible. So this middle, this equanimity, this emptiness, this unattached state of mind is something worthy, is something rich, is something sublime, is something peaceful. Therefore, Buddha recommends to come back to this middle, associate this middle, and to keep the mind unattached. Anissito cha viharati, nacha kinchi loke upadhyati. Maintain an unassociated state of mind without grasping anything in the world. So, if one is practicing this kind of vipassana practice, then one is maintaining the cessation of contact. You are not attached to the two ends, the arising aspect of the contact and the existing aspect of the contact. Rather, now you are maintaining the middle that is also unattached. The cessation is there, you are now experiencing the cessation. You are not bound to anything in the world. So, as a common fact, therefore it is said, if one know this kind of a practice, if one know these types of contact, the arising aspect, the cessation aspect, and the existing aspect, knowing those ends, but not attaching to any of them, and that wise person, Buddha say, is a great person, as a great man. So this is the kind of a solution that the other venerable is proposing in this audience, in this, we can say, a kind of a seminar. So with that, actually, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now we can discuss only another solution that we'll discuss on tomorrow. And I like to wind up today's Dhamma sermon with that. Thank you very much for listening.